Well, they're ugly, and so far, they're unreliable. But despite that, Andrew Vandenberg and Charles Bradley are here. They've taken time out of their busy schedules to join me, Henry Hope Frost, for the first Autosport podcast of 2014. All right, fellas?
Hello.
Afternoon, Henry.
The latest breed of F1 cars have been unveiled and are currently attempting to lap Jerez ahead of what promises to be one of the most unpredictable F1 seasons in years. One of our men on the scene, Ed Straw, will be joining us later to give us an eyewitness account. But before we get into that, these new cars and their frankly ridiculous noses, what's going on?
We're sort of reaping what was sowed by a set of poorly thought out regulations. Bob Bell, back more than 6 months ago, pointed out how the way in which they were designed with the bare minimum specification of how far it needed to be from the ground and the width meant that they would have these, for want of a better phrase, phallic appendages sticking out the front, and that's what we've got. The only saving grace is that there's been quite a few different ways of solving this problem, from the really extreme John Holmes end of the scale that Caterham have opted for to the sort of twin manta ray solution that appears that Lotus will be going for. So people have often complained that all the F1 cars look too similar. That's certainly not something you can accuse them of at the moment. They're just not going to win any beauty contests. No.
Charles, do you think they'll look a bit different come Melbourne?
I think there's going to be quite a lot of development in the area, to be honest. I'm certainly not sure if the Lotus is actually going to be deemed to be legal, because it's got a very, very sort of tenuous interpretation of the rules and what's a single tip and what isn't, and a single surface as well. But I'm with Andy, you know, I think diversity is something that's been sadly lacking from Formula One design in recent years, and it's great to see that the engineers have been let off the loose a bit, albeit they've come up with some very sort of wacky interpretations and, as he says, quite a phallic look to them.
We've been here before, like with the step noses and when the narrow rear wings come in, and initially the shock factor makes them look horrendous. I reckon by probably midway through the Australian Grand Prix weekend, you won't really even notice them anymore. Some of them being quite cunningly painted. The Force India, for example, with deploying quite a lot of black in the colour scheme, you can't really see it. So I think this is sort of a pass in initial shock phase.
And a word of warning too from Adrian Newey yesterday. He's talking to our man Jonathan Noble at the track at Jerez, and he warned that the designs very much lend themselves towards submarining under the rear of another car if there's some sort of failure, like a front wing failure we saw with Hamilton's car on day one of testing. If a car goes at high speed into the back of another one, then it's going to cause that car to go underneath, and that could cause a serious head injury to the driver.
The exact opposite of what they've been trying to get away with having high noses sort of T-boning people in the cheeks.
It's because you can't trust Formula One to come up with their own rules, because they'll just keep A, changing their minds, and B, coming up with something that looks terrible or is actually impractical. So, you know, it's just a very F1 solution.
Well, it is what it is, and perhaps we'll get used to it, I hope. There's been a couple of days of testing, guys. Can we read anything into what's happened so far at Jerez?
No. There's a couple of interesting developments. We're sort of midway through the second day at the moment, and all the Renault cars are no longer out on track. So that's Red Bull, Toro Rosso and Caterham. And that's because there's been a problem with the ERS unit. First of all, there was a problem with the design of the crankshafts, which stopped them running yesterday. Today, there's more of an electronic problem. So that's two full days worth of running that the Renault cars have missed out on. Oh, not to mention the fact, I know we're going to get onto it in a minute, the Lotus aren't even there full stop. So that's put them on the back foot. Have they got time to recover? Of course they have, absolutely. And reading anything into the sort of performance being demonstrated by the cars at the moment is folly. But it's not a good way for a defending championship team like Red Bull to start. I think Vettel's done 8 laps so far today. None of them hit anything approaching full speed. So there's a little bit of trouble there, which I know for a large constituent of our readers and listeners is probably good news, because having won all those races in a row, he does appear to be certainly not favourite at the moment for the next one.
Yeah. Just while Andy was giving the answer, not only did Marcus Ericsson go faster than Sebastian Vettel, you know, in a Caterham quicker than a Red Bull, he's just obviously blown up and stopped out on track course. And yet another red flag for a Renault engine.
Excellent.
The other thing to add on top of that is pre-season, or pre-testing rather, the word on the street was that the Mercedes engine look like the way forward. And we've seen so far in the amount of laps all those teams, so that's Mercedes itself, McLaren, Williams and Force India, have been able to do, they're easily the most reliable at the moment. So that's really valuable data they're putting on their cars. Performance wise, again, it absolutely a pinch of salt, but if you're a Valtteri Bottas fan, it's probably a good time to do a screen grab of the times.
And you certainly might want to put a few quid on Mercedes powered cars for the opening round of the year in Melbourne.
I think that'd be a very wise punt, yeah.
Lewis Hamilton had an off, didn't he, on the first day? What was that attributed to, and does that give the team cause for concern?
It was a front wing failure, and Paddy Lowe said that the team was looking into why it had failed, because obviously they strength test these things for that not to happen. But they've been running again today, and so far so good, so I think they might have strengthened that part of the car up. It does have quite a small area where it actually attaches the nose box to the front wing.
The other car that's running relatively reliably is the Ferrari, and there are only two teams out there, that's Ferrari and Mercedes, that are sort of a singular team where they make their chassis and the engines, and I think it's no coincidence that they're the ones that have hit the ground running so far.
You mentioned Lotus not being at Jerez at all for this four-day test. How significant is that? They've lost their team principal, haven't they, in recent hours. What's going to happen there, do you think?
Well, on the face of it, with the reliability problems Renault have, and it's not really much of a setback for them at all, but I think it's more an indication of how financially constrained they are at the moment. And obviously that should be a big cause for concern as they're building a new and potentially radical car. We know that Bouye has left because he wasn't being paid. We know that Kimi didn't get paid towards the end of last year, and there's been an enormous amount of personnel leaving over the winter, because these guys, the sort of beavers back in the den that you never get to see, they've got to pay their mortgages, they're not on £1 million salaries, and it's going to be a really hard season for them.
I mean, the stars of that show were definitely Bouye, Kimi Raikkonen, and James Allison, the technical director. All gone. And you also have to wonder where that leaves Romain Grosjean, because he was always a sort of Bouye protege as well. So it's looking like really, really testing times for Lotus.
Well, the look of the cars is obviously the most striking difference over their 2013 predecessors, but it's in the engine department where the biggest changes have taken place. This year, for the first time since 1988, we have turbocharged motors. There were some concerns that the V6 blowers wouldn't sound as good as the old 2.4 V8. One man who can give us the lowdown is our F1 editor, Ed Straw. Ed, thanks for joining us. You've been standing trackside at Jerez. How do the cars sound?
Not too bad. There's a lot of talk that they'd sound terrible and they'd be whispering their way past. They're not quite as shrill and piercing as the old 2.4 litre V8, but they sound really good. They sound like proper purebred racing engines, which, considering we're still, at the time of talking, only in the second day of running them, I think it's pretty good. I don't think anyone needs to be too desperately worried about the fact they're not going to sound like serious pieces of kit.
And turbo engines in the late 80s sounded quite good, didn't they?
Exactly, yeah. And these are, again, turbocharged engines. We're not going to quite see the mad power outputs and the incredible boost pressures, but they're still proper turbo racing engines, which is something I think we all remember very fondly from the turbo era in the late 70s and the 1980s. So I think that's good for the sport. Change technically is always an exciting thing for fans to get interested in and shout a bit about.
Is there a big contrast between the different manufacturers, Ferrari, Mercedes and Renault?
In terms of the sound, there's detail differences. It's really hard to tell at the moment because they're still getting through that phase of understanding how best to run them, etc. So we're not really still hearing cars being driven absolutely flat out. But you can hear differences. There's a few interesting things going on occasionally when they're at low revs, etc. But they haven't got their kind of trademark identity yet. But I think we will start to hear that. Although obviously every team is dictated a little bit by its exhaust, the design of that. We see some have got some pretty big exhaust outlets, which obviously means you get a slightly slower exhaust speed because there's not that premium on exhaust gases to produce downforces. For the most part, it's just going out the back of the car. So I think that's something that will evolve and grow over the next few days of testing and then through the Bahrain test and into the season.
What's going on with the Renault units? We understand there's been some energy recovery system problems across the board there.
Yeah, there have been quite a few struggles. Obviously, Renault have completed not very many laps at all. Sebastian Vettel in the Red Bull, which is effectively the Renault Works team managed pre-installation laps yesterday, and he's parked up after 8 laps today, as you say, with some energy recovery systems problems, and some of the other Renault teams, Caterham and Toro Rosso, have been having some difficulties, and there have been also a few little problems with running the engine. The Toro Rosso yesterday, they completed a relatively good amount of laps. It was only 15 laps, so that's still the third highest for the first day. But Jean-Eric Vergne was saying that the car was oscillating, and you could hear that as it drove around at the time, you know, going up the pit lane, going out to the pits. It was sort of juddering along. But I don't think it's this acute, desperate problem. You know, the engine does rough, but there's clearly some problems there that have blindsided Renault a bit, and they're working pretty hard to get on top of it. But if you look at the laps completed, you know, we've comfortably, Mercedes and Ferrari have outstripped Renault by an enormous margin in terms of mileage as of now, which is about an hour from the end of day two.
There hasn't been a great deal of running up and down the pit lane, actually, but from what you've seen, how do the cars actually look when they've been out there?
Yeah, we're starting to see a few of the characteristics. Again, it's very hard to judge because I don't think we've really been seeing people properly leaning on it and doing proper performance running. But, you know, you're seeing a few nice little spectacular moments. There was a nice picture of Kimi Räikkönen on the autosport.com homepage earlier today with him losing the rear a little bit and sideways out of the corner. I was watching at the turn one earlier, and you'd see Jenson Button having a little wobble at the exit. Kimi Räikkönen doing the same yesterday out of the last corner. So, yeah, there's a few nice moments. I mean, they don't look like a completely different species compared to the old cars, but they look pretty fun to drive, and as they get more refined and we see them running genuinely on the edge and get onto the genuine performance running later on, we'll get a bit more of an idea for what they're going to look like when they're fully lit.
Okay, a quick final question. Everyone was tipping Mercedes pre-season to have the edge. Is that still the case, do you think?
Well, Mercedes, the car looks nice, it's got good detailing on it. They were the car that was running the most effectively straight out of the box yesterday before, of course, they had a front wing failure with it, which put him off into the barrier at the first corner. But they completed a lot of laps today. So Nico Rosberg has just done a relatively long run by current standards, although that was interrupted by a red flag caused by Caterham. So, yeah, I think Mercedes are in quite good shape. And equally, Ferrari seems to be quite happy. They did have a stop on their first lap yesterday with Kimi Räikkönen, but they've been running around racking up a reasonable amount of laps, the most laps on the first day. But they're looking relatively happy. The only thing is, at the moment, we've got no idea where the relative pace is.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Renault are having problems, but it may be that they troubleshoot their problems and their engine is fundamentally the strongest. So it's incredibly early days. I think the basic gist is anybody who's getting serious mileage in will be happy now, and anyone who isn't will be pretty concerned.
Okay, we'll let you get back to work, Ed. Thanks for joining us, Ed Straw.
Thank you and goodbye.
Away from the cars, there was some big news over the past fortnight. Firstly, there's the return of Kamui Kobayashi, who partnered Swedish rookie Marcus Ericsson at Caterham. Is that a good move for him, guys?
It's certainly a good move for F1. Kobayashi is one of those incredibly popular drivers, probably more popular than his overall ability deserves. He has this reputation as being somewhat of I hate to use it because it's the most cliched and borderline racist phrase, kamikaze overtaker, which is, he's nothing from the sort, really. He had quite a good first race at Toyota where he passed a few people in Abu Dhabi and it seems to have stuck. But yeah, good for him. I think he deserves another crack at F1. I don't think the Caterham's probably not going to be the car that he had at Sauber, where he was able to finish on a podium in Japan that year with a mega drive. But yeah, it's good. And in fairness, you know, Pick and Van der Garde they had before hadn't really set the world on fire. Kovalainen had a couple of miserable races for Lotus at the end of last season and didn't really cover himself in any glory. So yeah, give Kobayashi another go.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Ericsson's a little bit of an uninspired choice, yeah. Especially with what Tony Fernandez said recently about Robin Frins, saying that he maybe should have given him the drive. I'd go along with that, because I think Frins is eminently more talented. You know, Ericsson did 4 years of GP2. Okay, he won a couple of races. He's got an element to speed to him, but I find him woefully inconsistent, whereas Frins, I think, is a really exciting young talent, and someone should take a chance on him. So it'd be interesting to see if he does get a chance later in the year, if Ericsson and sucks.
Yeah, also I think the second Ericsson's checks a bit late, Frins will be in that car. Well, I mean, not that there's nothing to suggest that he's not a regular payer, but if that happens.
Okay, the other big news was Eric Boullier leaving Lotus and taking up the role of racing director at McLaren. That's a big job. Is he up to it?
Both Charles and I have known Eric for a very long time. Obviously, he certainly earned his stripes in the junior formula. In fact, for a long time, we were planning on doing a feature with him, calling him the busiest man in motorsport, but he was too busy to do it.
Classic.
he's a genuinely good, proper racing man who really, really gets it. And it's good to see those people being promoted into those positions. And I think maybe this is a recognition from McLaren that they'd stepped too far away from being a pure racing team. We've seen what happened at Red Bull and Lotus, whereby being just a old-fashioned pure racing team with quite a vertical hierarchy, the rewards are quite are there for the taking. Whereas McLaren, I know modern racing cars are quite complicated, but having that really sort of linear and horizontal matrix structure just didn't work. And I think Eric is an inspired choice.
Yeah, it's been quite some boardroom coup at McLaren, hasn't there, with Ron Dennis coming back. But I don't think he's got any illusions that he's coming back to be on the pit wall. I think, you know, hopefully he'll give Eric and whoever becomes in as CEO. I think there's another role still to be filled, isn't there? Which I don't think is going to be Martin Whitmarsh, because I don't think they see him eye to eye anymore. So if Ron steps back and allows Eric to do his job, I think he's the man who can pull McLaren back up to where it belongs.
Yeah, I think everyone who's met Whitmarsh appreciates what a nice guy he is and everything. But after the season that McLaren endured, you know, completely winless, not even a podium, I think his position has become untenable. And maybe it is time for a bit of a new broom to sweep there. With the resources and history that McLaren have, you know, they should be winning championships on a regular basis, not just satisfied with the occasional race win.
And I'd go along with Whitmarsh. I think he did a great job of bringing through some young talent in Kevin Magnussen and Stoffel Vandoorne, which they've placed with ART and GP2. But you also wonder, is he a Whitmarsh driver, and might he actually be tarred a little bit in that way? So I think Kevin's basically, if now more than ever, he's going to have a cracking rookie season to have a chance of keeping that seat.
Yeah, and obviously there's a Boullier driver in Romain Grosjean that had a stellar end of last season and an unstable looking Lotus. Yeah, so he's obviously waiting in the wings should anything happen.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, a month on, and seven-time world champion Michael Schumacher remains in an induced coma following that skiing accident just after Christmas. It's obviously been a worrying time for his family and his legions of fans. Is there any change in his condition, do we know?
Unfortunately not, but I'm very sceptical of any of the speculation. And basically, unless it comes out of the hospital or from Sabine Kerman's manager, I'm not willing to believe in anything that I hear from there. He's been looked after by the best people, and they'll be doing exactly the best for him. The brain's a really complicated organ, and until they bring him out of the coma, I don't think anyone's in a position to know what condition he'll be in. Obviously, like I say, it's been over a month, and that's quite worrying.
Yeah.
But I think we have to be positive and hope for the best.
I mean, even talking to experts in trauma like Gary Hartstein, who wrote a column for us about it, every case is individual when it comes to a head injury of that magnitude. And all you can say is there's a very, very long road to recovery. And but you can only speculate, and we're not in the business of speculating.
Yeah, of course, we wish Michael well. Unlike Marussia, we've made it to the end of the run. We'll be back after the next test in Bahrain to discuss things and how they've progressed. Andrew and Charles, thank you. And thanks to you for your company. And that's a lap.
Autosport.com. All the news first.